We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Good evening, welcome to NUFC Matters, the professionals with me, Steve, Rafe, Mitch and Stu Penman. How are you, lads?
All right, mate.
Very good.
No game this weekend, but plenty news and not all Newcastle United news. And I think it would be remiss if we didn't start with this Gateshead news. It's a bombshell for the Heat Army today, 24 hours after that 2-1 home win against Bromley. Confirmed that they had a National League playoff tie at Solihull Moors. Gateshead have been removed from the playoffs after failing to meet the EFL stadium eligibility criteria. I've never heard anything as stupid in all my life. So basically, because certain assurances haven't been given, and paperwork hasn't been filled in on time. Basically, Gateshead's chances of being in the playoffs and potentially getting back into the league have been taken away from them, punishing the fans, punishing the players, and punishing the backroom staff and punishing the people who put their money where their mouth was when Gateshead could have gone out of existence. The council have responded. Gateshead Council, of course, who own Gateshead Stadium, have responded. I will give you their response. We continue to be supportive of Gateshead Football Club, who we have a very good working relationship with. We've offered a licensing agreement in line with the requirements of its current league, which allows for further negotiations if the club achieves promotion. However, we're currently working to appoint a partner operator for our leisure facilities, including the stadium, as we're not yet able to confirm how the stadium's operations will be managed in the long term. Been difficult to provide the 10-year security of tenure that the league is seeking. We've offered several times to work with all parties to find a solution, and we recently provided a letter which would give the league assurances they were seeking, whilst at the same time protecting the interests of the council. The assurances included a 10-year agreement between the council and Gateshead Football Club that includes a break clause in the agreement to ensure any new operator is able to negotiate new terms with the club. Unfortunately, this does not seem to be enough for the English Football League. Whilst the announcement by the league is extremely regrettable, I hate stuff like that when they put that, and we understand the club's disappointment, our priority is to ensure that we can provide sustainable and accessible leisure services for all our communities. We remain committed to working with all interested parties to achieve a positive resolution and will continue to advocate the success of Gateshead Football Club. Gateshead have responded to the National League and the EFL statement, confirmed their stance, of course, and revealed no further comments would be made due to the legality of the matter. Their statement read, Gateshead Football Club are extremely disappointed to find ourselves in the position as outlined in statements by the EFL and the National League. Rest assured, we will continue to challenge both on their decisions and we will endeavour to ensure that football and matters are decided on the pitch. There, our players and staff remain 100% focused on the task in hand, and we wish to go on record to express our gratitude to the National League for supporting our challenge to the EFL. Due to the legality of this matter, no further comments will be made by Gateshead Football Club until appropriate. Mitch, what an absolute mess this is. And I'm really, really feel for Gateshead. I know this is a Newcastle United podcast, but Gateshead's our nearest club. There's been a great relationship between us and Gateshead over the years. The current manager is a former Newcastle United goalkeeper, and the previous manager was a former Newcastle United centre-half. This is a mess, isn't it?
Look, if you look at everything we've ever talked about on this channel, and, you know, if Hastie was here, he'd be saying the same thing. We've talked at length about the relationship between fans, clubs and governing bodies and how the dynamics work and how difficult those dynamics are at times. Gateshead are a club that stand out as having been subjected to a rather bizarre takeover in the past that nearly saw them disappear altogether at the end of it. And then the fans of the club and people invested in the club have sort of scrambled that back there together and worked their absolute arses off to get them back to where they are right now, which is not only have they got...
Coventry! I've got to stop you there. Coventry have just scored in the last minute of the FA Cup semi-final extra time period with a deflected goal. Coventry 4, Manchester United 3.
And you must be a little bit ahead about what's going down on downstairs because I've not heard anything yet. In a bit, there'll be an eruption down there.
In the morning.
We are coming back to this, by the way. It's already in our... We don't have these shows, you know, but we've already said we are going to come back to this, the magic of the FA Cup. However...
Yes.
Sorry, mate.
You look at the journey they've been on and they've got to this point where they've worked their arses off and thought, look, we've got a reward here. We've got a chance to go further. In a week where we've talked about the structure and hierarchy within the game and who has responsibility for what, you've got a number of things going on here.
That's called a Dubai delay.
Dubai delay. And that's a couple of Chelsea fans downstairs can mend.
Fantastic.
So we talk about the structure of the game, the hierarchy of the game, and there's a lot of things going on here. What are the EFL playing at in terms of denying somebody an ability to get promotion? Because of the current set of circumstances, they want a reassurance going forward. Why do they want that? They've let so many clubs get into trouble by putting dodgy buyers. The EFL are worse than the EPL for that. How many clubs have gone?
Sorry,
to the
Mitch.
War?
It's gone to VAR. This. It's offside.
Okay. Well, in a couple of minutes, you'll hear another eruption. When you look at how many clubs they've effectively allowed to go to the wall by putting dodgy owners in who've done things like Coventry. Look at the Coventry situation when they had the Icelandic owners who then fell out with each other. One owned the ground, one owned the club, and then one brought Wasps to the ground, and it was Wasps' ground, not Coventry's ground anymore. Then Coventry had a period of not playing at home anymore. They couldn't play at their own ground. They played at Birmingham. And all of these things going on, and that's on the AFL. So we're now saying that Gateshead can't get promoted. Based on what? Well, here's the next twist. Local council. And we know Gateshead have had not the happiest of relationships with the local council over the years. And some of this, you've got to say, maybe on the club, that they've had to find a solution for where they played over a number of years. And a number of other solutions have been offered that have either been knocked away, dismissed, or not been able to work out. The International Stadium is an appalling venue for football, in my opinion. I've never liked being there, watching football there. It's not really set up for football at all. It doesn't really have a soul. But what it obviously is to Gateshead Council is something they can cash in on. why they're saying they can't guarantee Gateshead to be there for 10 years is because they're looking for independent, somebody independent to come in to run the stadium. Beg your pardon? Have you got other ideas for that ground? Have you got other ideas for that land? Just all seems convoluted, made up, and for them to not have the best interests of something for their local community in mind. You bear in mind if Gateshead went up to the Football League, up to that third division as it is, yeah? Second division as it is, sorry. They would be as close to Sunderland almost as we are. Isn't that huge for Gateshead Council to have, you know, of the Football League team in that in the heart of that the constituency in the area, that own local team carrying a banner forward, with the links that could make with both teams further up the pyramid. I think it smacks of personal agenda and personal fallouts over a number of years, and nobody actually being able to sit down and see the bigger picture of why some sort of cooperation and coordination would be beneficial to everybody in this situation. And what they've done is denied a football club and their supporters and their players and their backroom staff and the people who have worked bloody hard to drag them up by the bootstraps from where they were left after a very dodgy takeover that went wrong. It makes you wonder why they bother. And there must be people there wondering why they bother anymore. Because I would be. I would be questioning my very existence within that organisation if it's been made plain to me that the very people, the community I supposedly represent, don't give a monkey's about me.
This is a shocking situation, Stu.
Yeah, before talking about Gates, there's a couple of things I wanted to say. First of all, a very good friend of mine and a friend of yours as well, Mr. Nick, is 50 today. So happy birthday to Nick.
Happy birthday, Nick.
Now, he's only a few days younger than this, so I can say happy birthday, Jürgen. Have a great time. And the second thing is I'd like to praise Mr. George Mitchell for his video that was released. And I know he's too humble to see himself, and I know you were part of it as well, Steve. But I do know for a fact that Mitch and the family are bursting with pride for George, and he embodies what it means to support Newcastle, and we're privileged he walks amongst us as long may it continue. So I just thought I'd get that on before I started talking about other things. The Gateshead, as you both know, I've been working all day, so I don't know that much about it, but I've read what you've read out, and it's also very interesting that Nick DeMarco threw his hat in the ring. And obviously Gateshead can't afford him straight out. It would be very good to get Gibbo's opinion on this as well. But the fact that Nick DeMarco said a group of them could get together, that's very interesting. And it leads me to believe that he believes they have a case. And there is a bit of anti-competitiveness there. But also, they're not even promoted yet. Why can't they get promoted then, say, if you want to make the step up, these are the conditions that you need, and then give them the time to do it before they say, sorry, no room at the inn, next one through the door. You know, it seems to be that a decision's made before the outcome's actually arisen, which is a bit worrying, a bit disturbing, and a bit draconian, if you ask me. So like Luton Town, they got promoted last season to the Premier League. Their ground wasn't worthy, but they were given time to get it right. And they had certain things they had to adhere to fit the ground, to get the ground to that standard. But imagine if Gateshead did get promoted, the pressure on the council to guarantee them that lease, because I think that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about the verification of a 10-year lease. Then anyone who's in council, who wants to stay in council, would have to give it. But take the short-sightedness away, it would be a massive boon for the region as well. For Gateshead, you know, it would mean bigger crowds. It would obviously help the local economy a lot every other week when more fans are coming to watch. It'll give them more national recognition. And it seems like it's a knee-jerk reaction. When you have the AFL, I know Mitch mentioned some other teams who are giving ownership to, was it the Wigan owner, Mitch, who didn't even exist? They give ownerships to people who aren't even real, And then they're stopping people who, oh, this is what it's football is about. It's the, it's about being the heart and soul of the local community. It doesn't matter if there's 2,000 watching you or 200,000 watching you. There's too much now football. I know we're going to talk about FA Cup later, but it gives the ordinary working man and woman the right to dream, the right to believe. And now there's so much talk about lawyers and court cases and everything else. It's stifling what it's about. And they'll have to be very careful or the bubble's going to burst. What is the point in Gateshead competing if they've reached the top of their tree? You know, they've done so well to get to where they are. For a long time, they were just drifting in the Northern Leagues. But now in the National League, with a chance to get into the proper English Football League. And before they've even got their playoffs, they're told they can't even get in it. Why didn't they get told at the start of the season to get things put in place? It's just typical that politics are running football, and it's wrong. So hopefully there's a resolution shortly in the Gateshead Council. Buckle, spin it any way they want to make it look like they're doing everyone a favour, but ultimately they're doing themselves a favour. So fingers crossed it goes that way for Gateshead, and it's not the final decision.
At the end of the day, look, the leisure industry up in councils up and down. I mean, some councils have gone bankrupt. You know, Gateshead, you know, isn't going bankrupt, but they have got a lot of assets, and I think a lot of them will be sold off. And the stadium is a huge asset. You know, from our perspective as well, we look at we look at the leisure facilities around us, and some of them have been closed. Some of them will go into the hands of other people. So, you know, it's a story which will run and run. You know, we'll watch it with interest. Those of you who are of a non-league persuasion as well, unfortunately, Blyth Spartans confirmed their relegation yesterday. It was always going to be tough for them. They left it all to do on the last game of the season, playing a third team, the third top team. So they are relegated. Spennymoor and South Shields both won. They both missed out, though, on promotion playoff places in the same division by a single point. And Hebburn Town remain in pole position to claim the Northern Premier League East title and can confirm that at home against Ossett United on Tuesday. And Bishop Auckland just need a single point from their remaining three games to win the First Division title. So there's your non-league update. Don't often do that, but it's getting to the business end of the season. I thought that with the Gateshead story, it was well worth doing it. The penalty shootout has started. Manchester United have missed a penalty. Casemiro missed the very first one. Awful penalty. Coventry at this moment in time, 2-1 up. We'll get back to that over the course of the next couple of minutes. FA Cup, we did did talk about this on the Amigos, Stu. So I'll come to you first because you haven't had your chance to say this. The arrogance of cancelling the replays. You were chipping in the chat, and I know you wanted to mention this a little bit today, but we were going to talk about it. And it seems poignant, you know, especially with us sitting here with Coventry potentially, you know, with one foot in the FA Cup final. This is what the romance of the Cup's all about. But to cancel replays, you know, you're stifling it. And you had an idea or suggestion of what might happen. You know, give us your thoughts on what we were talking about on Friday.
Well, the ones that have spoke out about it, the top-end managers, when was the last time they had an FA Cup replay anyway? You know, but they're all happy to take the extra two games in the Champions League. So, again, they're getting led by money. But when you were just speaking about it on Friday, I was a bit mischievous because a thought came in my head. I thought I'd better share it because I'm about to forget. And what I said was it wouldn't be long before they start seeding the third round draw and beyond. Like 64 teams, whoever was top of the league the season before, you can't do it as it is at that time because people have games in hand and stuff like that. But if whoever finished this season first would be seed number one. That would then, if they sold it properly and took the time instead of just being blinded by greed, they might have actually got this passed through. Now, for example, Man City would be seed number one. And let's just say Gateshead, because that's who we're talking about. They managed to qualify for the third round and they were the lowest ranked team. They would be seed 64. So, or like they do in tennis, like they do at the Opens in tennis, the top player plays the bottom player and then it goes through the knockout stages that way. Now, I'm not advocating this. I'm saying it's a way of... It's not that far-fetched, to be honest, because it then allows their smaller team their day in the sun. The smaller teams are never going to win the FA Cup. When I say smaller teams, I mean like from the League One, League Two and below. But what they has been taken off them is the romance, is the ability to get a shock draw at home and at least get the money from away, from an away leg, if a replay, if that happens. But again, it's very rare that does happen. But if it's not even there, that to me, in effect, would reduce the crowds anyway. So there's a bigger knock-on effect. It also has the TV companies like, do they really need to go and watch this upset? Or it's not just the one-off game it takes away, but by seeding it, like I said earlier, it gives the smaller team their day in the sun. It gives them the big gate. It possibly gives them the TV revenue. But it also allows the people who are running the football in this country, the favoured six, it gives them more opportunity to qualify to the latter rounds, which generates more revenue for them, because that's Coventry have missed the pen.
Two now, they missed two penalties. Manu's going to win. Unbelievable. Yeah, carry on.
Not yet. Keep the faith. So it keeps the bigger teams in the competition longer, which realistically, I know this is quite hypocritical when we're watching a game where you're watching a game like this at the moment. But when you get the quarterfinals and you've got eight of the top 10 teams in the Premier League, whether we like it or not, that will attract a bigger audience. You know, realistically, I can only speak from the Middle East region, but I can guarantee you more people watching Liverpool today than they were watching Man United Coventry. And that's from, maybe it's not the expats, but that's the people who live here. So it's all dictated by TV figures. So I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't get mooted or suggested or bandied about, rumoured over the next couple of weeks, months. That's it's an option where the Big Six can sell it. Sorry, the Premier League, the FA can sell it as a way of compensating the teams who have managed to reach the third round. Look, we'll guarantee you a big payday against one of the top teams. It was just something that could be headed. I might be totally way off the mark, but do I agree with it? Absolutely not. So I'm not saying this is the way it should go. What I'm saying is I wouldn't be surprised if it did go that way, and I can see the merits in it. So I wanted to say that when I was being a bit mischievous when I commented on Friday and the Amigos regarding the seedings. But the more I thought about it, the more actually practically it makes sense, but it does take out the jeopardy of what the FA Cup's all about.
Well, Manchester United are through. Mitch, disappointing that, you know. I'm so gutted for Coventry. And, you know, I couldn't have given the monkeys whether that meant we got, you know, there was an extra place for Europe, whatever. You know, people saying, oh, do we need them to stick? Do we need Man United to get through? I wanted Man United to get beat there. They should have been beaten. This is, and I tell you what, this is where it really boils my, it's the VAR. You know, VAR really shouldn't be used at all, because it's not used in the early part of the competition. It's not used in part of the competition where Premiership teams are playing a Championship team. And this is where it's just unfair. It really is. And I think this whole, you know, as we talked about on Friday, this whole replays thing being scrapped, it's just making it sterile. What do you make of what what do you make of what Stu said?
No, I obviously understand from a regional perspective about what you want to do to make the FA Cup attractive to people outside of the region. It's difficult to speak to us about the FA Cup as a club that has a embedded history with the FA Cup and understand some of the subtle nuances in terms of, I find it ironic when the weekend that the FA have announced what they're going to do, you get a fixture like this in a semi-final that could have been so different and absolutely epitomises what the FA Cup should have been about. About the underdog having to go and bloody in the nose of a big team and then getting a replay out of it. And yet, here we are, penalties and through Man United go, and the status quo seems to go on. And that's frustrating for the romanticist. I can understand the other side of it totally, mate. It's very, very difficult. But there is a reason why the FA Cup. It's funny, I was talking to somebody who really doesn't understand much about football out here a few days ago. And they said, why isn't there such a furore about the equivalent of the FA Cup in Germany? And why aren't we talking about the Italian FA Cup? And I says, it's about romance. It's about how people respect that competition. The FA Cup is steeped in history. It's steeped in things like Ronnie bloody Radford that we have to suffer every year. A lot of that, in one stroke, has just been taken away. For me, for no apparent reason, I don't understand why take away replays in the first and second round. That's no business of the Premier League. But what they're doing is they're saying, right, let's set this format for the whole competition for all the way through for when our teams get involved. And it does lose some of that mystique, some of that grandeur, some of that passion and the love that we have for the competition, the oldest ratified football competition that's still in existence. And we, well, Stu, you're getting off. I think as fans deserve better than that. And there's teams around England that will lose out in the next few years. That shouldn't have. I get why it's become difficult with other things going on around to get some teams worked up about it. But it still carries some cachet around the world, the FA Cup as a brand. And yet what they've done, and for me in one stroke, is take some of that away forever. And that's sad. I find that very sad indeed.
Okay, yeah, if you're just tuning in, Manchester United won 4-2 on penalties. Amazing game, that. Coventry 3-0 down at Wembley today. Finished 3-3. Should have been 4-3. But VAR chalked off the winning goal for Coventry in the last minute of the game. And some rather smug, arrogant faces amongst the Man United players on the pitch. It's why I hate them. I've got to be honest. Cannot stand Manchester United. And good luck to Man City in the final. Really despise Manchester United at times, and today is one of them. One of them days, I'm afraid. Michael says, what do the boys think of the Forest statement? They asked Stuart Atwell to be removed as VAR for their game with Everton, as he was a Luton Town fan, and refused and then denied them three penalties today. Now, the message that we got from Nottingham Forest on their social media was thus: three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. Nottingham Forest Football Club will now consider its options. Some might say social media should have been a little bit more discreet than that. Maybe they should have held their maybe they should have held their peace and just left it to whoever deals with their paperwork, Mitch. But passions are running high. Interesting tweet, that.
I think Forrest Owner did an absolute lungful of poppers and then grabbed the bloody laptop off the social media guy and decided, I'm going to have a go at this. You wonder where it's gone. I mean, that's one of the most out there statements I've seen from an official club account of any kind for a long time. I'll tell you what the problem is here, and it goes back to PGMOL, their way of defending their members is to just ignore it and hope it goes away. Atwell has history, and it doesn't take much these days with a smartphone, Google, and half a brain to do a little bit of research. And if you do a little bit of research, you'll find there was Norwich and one other team complained last season about him when he was put in charge of a promotion push game involving Norwich. I forget who the other team was, but they both weren't happy because they both pointed out he's a Luton fan and he's got skin in this game. And Redden did it the season before. And so whether it's true or not, what's happened is now enough shit's been thrown that they've just ignored and some of it's stuck. And it's funny, I was having a conversation about this. Actually, dig through me Twitter somewhere. I think it was openly on Twitter between me mate Craig and a Macam mate of ours, who was an ex-skunker, John, about the time we had derbies and officiating in them. And who took charge of the second leg of the 1990 playoffs? George Courtney.
Oh, yes. I forgot about this.
Well-known Sunderland fan. Yep. And the last thing anybody complained about was that it was a Macam. Because we also knew he was a fucking good referee and probably one of the few who could handle that fixture properly. And nobody worried about it. How many times did Courtney officiate us? Bloody loads. I don't remember anybody ever raising a complaint about Courtney officiating us because we knew he was a well-known Sunderland fan. Oftentimes, we were quite grateful because Courtney was officiating them because we knew he was a bloody good referee. We knew we'd get a fair shake of the bloody whip. That's gone these days. But the problem is PGMOL have ignored any of these allegations against Atwell in the past. And what's happened right now is some of that shit sticks. You know, if you look at other examples in the past, we had Graham Poole refereeing us in a semi-final against Chelsea after he'd said in the newspaper he hated Newcastle fans. The semi-final that we then lost with a goal scored from a free kick taken with the ball moving, if I remember right.
But last time we scored there, wasn't it?
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, we didn't have our club coming out afterwards saying we're going to make a statement, we're going to have a large year. So I think Forrest's behaviour is quite left field on the back of this. But what's happened is that we've got a referee who's now been accused of being biased. And I haven't had time to do enough digging, but I bet if I find some more, do some more digging, I'll find more. Where the smoke, there's always fire. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you go back through Atwell's career, there'll be a number of times he's been accused of being involved in the game that he had no business being involved in because people felt he had skin in the game. And whether it's right and whether it's wrong, what you should do as a body is you either come out and defend the man openly or you pull him for his own sake. And now here we are in a situation, and again, I made this point on Twitter the night. I reckon when the final whistle blows at the end of the season, the league season isn't over. It's going to end up with lawyers. And that's on the Premier League, that's on PGMOL, that's on everybody involved in this, because what they've done is haven't been able to handle the situation in any sort of correct or absolutely right manner, and it leaves grey areas and questions and doubts. And yet, historically, I have no memory of ever being upset about, say, Courtney officiating. The only referee I ever get wound up about historically is Trelford fucking Mills. Yeah. And people of the right generation and have all just shivered. Right? You know, if you talk to Chris Betts about his dad was a linesman. And the amount of times Betts' dad ran the line at St James's Park, they're as black as white as they come, man. And yet nobody had a problem with him running the line. Why? Because he was recognised as a bloody good official. He was recognised as somebody who was at the top of his game and was fair and was honest. You know, and that's all I would ever ask of a referee. I have no problem with a referee openly saying I support a club X, but if their behaviour shows you that they're an absolute gem of a referee, no bother. The problem with that, well, is there's previous, there's history, and there's things that are hanging around that stink. Are we that short of very good officials in the top flight? And I believe the answer is yes. That we've got to sort of leave these sort of threads untied at the end. I don't agree with the way Forrest have done it. I think that's quite bizarre grandstanding. I think the behaviour is unusual. It's aberrant. But also, while the Premier League is suffering from an ability to defend themselves, to run the game properly, that opened all of this. And it's their problem. It's not Nottingham Forest's problem. It's not even Stuart Atwell's problem. It's theirs. And this is what that breeds. And an ability to run the game properly and show weakness and show places where you are not capable and you are not competent, which they have them with Everton, with Forest, and so many more. Well, look, we're going to put this to an independent commission. Why? Because you're not confident in your own rules and you can't apply your own rules properly. That, again, always stunk for me. You either apply the rules and you administer the punishment or you don't. And if you don't, you're really a problem. And yeah, okay, if it's more to do with Forest asking it to change the VAR and they didn't, would like to know why. Because it's left an area where there's an underbelly exposed and somebody's going to go for it. And oh, by God, has Forest just gone for it?
Steve Hastie just tweeted, in light of recent events, the FA have just announced their new advertising slogan, "There are no minnows in our game." Good one, Steve. Yes, yeah, Stu, this statement by Forest, and you know, they're losing their rag a little bit today. I know that the pundits have already had their say. Ian Wright and Roy Keane said it was, you know, they shouldn't have done that.
No, maybe they shouldn't, but it's, as Mitch referenced at the start of his speech there, it's a very Mediterranean-type response. I shouldn't say anything. I'm going to. And that's it. They get angry and get it off the chest. But that wouldn't have been tweeted without his consent, that's for sure. Now, also the aforementioned Nick DeMarco represented Forrest in the last legal case. And I'm sure he would have been consulted before anything like that went out. Now, what they're highlighting is, or what they're trying to highlight, is conspiracies against them. Now, whether that's true, whether it's proven, whether it's not, it's against, they're actually contradicting themselves. They're trying to get everything to be fair in the game, and then they're suggesting something's not, which isn't fair, and what they've done isn't fair, and two wrongs don't make a right. And the problem that we're getting to is the joy's getting sucked out of football, and that's what the TV companies, the owners, everyone else that's getting involved and trying to take the agents, everyone who's trying to take the bit out of the pie and wanting more and more and more. And I've said it repeatedly, greed kills everything. And if you suck the enjoyment out of anything, what's the point? And even if you looked at what we're talking about, Gates said before, if they can't even better what they're doing, what's the point? And that takes us back to this financial fair play, PSR, whichever three-letter acronyms you want to come out with. But what they're trying to do is paint a picture where it's fairer to everyone. So not next season, the season after, it's a reset. That's what they're trying to say. It's a reset, but we start with a squad that's worth £1 billion. You start with a squad because you've just got promoted that's worth £100 million. However, to be fair, you can spend 50, but we can spend 300. You can't spend anything, but if you do, we'll fine you. You can spend 100. So it's a handicap race before you even start. So there's no equality, and that's what football's about. You want to be in a position where, we don't want to keep referencing Leicester, but like when Norwich bloodied a few noses, going back to the mid-80s, you know, there's times it happens. And yes, we all know, even if you support that team, it's not going to last forever. But the fact is that they had their, for the second time tonight, I'm going to use the same phrase, their day in the sun, that's getting stifled out of football now. So only the top teams can ever win something unless there's a very, very rare occurrence. Coventry nearly created one today. Something happened with Leicester a few years ago, but more and more often it's becoming too predictable. But if things are too predictable, it stops people watching it. You know, you want to be in a position where, yes, Blackburn could throw money on it because the owner could afford it and he took over to win the league. There wasn't that many complaints then. Liverpool was sponsored by the pools for years. You know, there's so much that's wrong with the game. And it's a game that we all love. But unfortunately, the people who are funding it from their own pockets, which is the fans, don't have a say in what's happened, because the money that's going into it is getting taken off out to majority of the money going to the Premier League goes out to America with the owners there. And I mean, I'm not going to talk about that too much because Mitch will go off on one about the ownership models and Delaware companies and everything else. But the point I'm getting at is Forest, they rightly believe that there's an injustice against them. Have they went about it the wrong way? No. But have they shown a bit of passion? Yes. So I admire them for having the balls to say it in the first place. They'll probably get fined and probably dock more points for daring to suggest there's something wrong. But at least they're speaking out. And there's too many clubs in that league that are just ready to have their head patted and just nod. So fair play to Forest, because they come up already not even allowed to spend as much money as everyone else in the league because they've just been promoted. So the handicap to start with, and looking at it, they had a lot of loan players. They had to buy players to even field the team. So they had to overspend. And then because Tottenham wanted to buy Johnson for £10 million cheaper, they held the nerve, which is their business right. But because it went from one financial year into the other, right in the middle of a transfer window, they end up getting dog points by being business savvy. So it's there's too much now where, whether it's shows like this, whether it's the national shows like the BBC Five Live, whether it's TalkSport, there's so much getting talked about the finance and the PSR and the politics of football, rather than talk about the game that we all love. And that's where it's going to go on its knees. That's where people are just going to say, do you know what? What is the point? We know we can't win. What's the point in even trying to compete? And then as fans, what's the point in going if we can't dream of winning the league? We've got no chance of winning the league. Because unless it's one of those blue moon scenarios, pardon any Man City analogy there, how can we compete with teams that are allowed to spend 4 or 5 times more money than us from a better starting position? It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it fair. And football should be about the romance we've talked about, the cup. It should be about the ability where on any given day, any given week, any given month, any given season, one team can go and win the league. Now, I know I'm harping on about the good old days, because the word old good, we just remember the happy times. Like if you talk about when we were school kids in the summer holidays, every day was a sunny day. No, it wasn't, but that's what we remember. What we have to think of, where's the Nottingham Forest been able to win the league? Where's Derby County's been able to win the league? This will never, ever happen again. So what do we have to do? Do we all have to pick one of six teams and say, that's who we support? That's our franchise? Because that's what's going to end up now, unless we start fighting back. And unless it comes to a situation where we do fight back as fans, it's going to be very much franchised or regionalised. Where they've tried to do with the cricket, they'll have a northeastern team, they'll have a northwestern team, and they'll segment it that way where there's no relegation and the owners take all the money out. And us lemons will just keep following them. And it's going to get to the stage where it will be, and I think it could be this summer, and it's highly likely it's going to be Nottingham Forest. If they go down by 1 or 2 points, I can see them making an almighty challenge, and they've got nothing to lose after that. So let them have it. So I understand why they posted that. I know it's not right, but I can fully understand it and I applaud the fact that they've got the passion and the balls to see it. So well done, Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, plenty to get on with on this show tonight. 45 minutes left. Some good questions. I will come to them in a bit. We're going to have a little ad break. Don't forget, if you want to make a comment in the chat, you must subscribe to the channel now. It's a small request. We are trying to get up to 52,500, which will, of course, be equal with the inside of St. James's Park at the moment. We are only 94 away from hitting 52,000. So please subscribe. Just hit the subscribe button. It is free. It doesn't cause you any issues. Here's the ads. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Telephone 0800 25 45 253. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com. Website skipsandbins.com. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Telephone 01768 210102. or email info@mrvickys.co.uk. Thanks to United Group Travel, there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Their website, unitedgrouptravel.com, email beverly.ugtl@gmail.com, telephone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. Thanks to Media Arts for the technical side of things. And you can also find us as a podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or other podcast providers. You can subscribe to the channel by hitting the subscribe button underneath this video. Hit the all notifications bell so you don't miss a show. Hit the thumb up to like the channel and click share to your social media. If you want to join the channel, then click join for as little as $1.99 a month. If you want to become a member for a one-off £25 payment, email john@nufcmatters.com or go to membership at the website nufcmatters.com. If you've got a smartphone, hold your camera over the QR code and it'll take you straight there. We also help the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk to the match day bucket and you can leave a virtual donation today. Don't forget as well, end of season due. Tickets are at 10 at 20th of July at the Tyneside Irish Centre. You can get your tickets on nufcmatters.com or newcastlelegends.com. All proceeds going to Dementia Matters, Supermac and Gibbo, and Ask George Live on stage, as well as an acoustic set with Trev and Gaz from the Long Sands. Going to be a cracking day. Lots of tickets already sold. 5 o'clock start. A good chance for us all to get together and celebrate what has turned out to be a very interesting season, to say the least. Okay, as I said, plenty to get through on here. And there was a good question just came in from Andrew. Good evening, Andrew Davis. Long time no see. He says, as Neil is in Dubai and Stu is in Bahrain, what is the reaction to the hiring of Stephen Taylor as a football manager? It's a strange social media video, to say the least. Yeah, that came about last week, didn't it, Mitch? Interesting to see him being unveiled as some kind of super coach. What's your thoughts on that?
It's a very sort of regional social media-based concept, that almost to the point of crowdfunding the football team. Below the top division here in the UAE, it's a little bit of a mess, I think it's fair to say. You've got some teams who are supported by locals with personal wealth. So I'll give you an example. When I used to live up in Ras Al Khaimah, you've got Ras Al Khaimah Club where, who's the Spanish lad that's there at the minute? There's a Spanish footballer of some repute who's there at the minute. And then you had Al Tawan, who were right up on the border with Oman at Musandam. And you go to the border at Musandam and you're going through effectively a goat herder's village. And then all of a sudden there's a 10,000 all-seater stadium and 5G training pitch in the middle of nowhere in the shadow of a mountain. And they've got two Brazilians playing for them. And it's all funded by a local royal. And it's fabulous. And totally unexpected. And that's like the local derby. So I've been to a couple of Alto on Ras Al Khaimah local derbies, which was always interesting, if not else. And very tribal, it has to be said. And so football here below the top flight is a little bit unusual. So to have a team that's effectively being crowdfunded isn't an unusual one. I don't know what incentive they've given Stephen Taylor to get on the back of it. Stephen's last club out here was Gulf United, who are a well-recognised sort of lower division team here. And he took them from promotion from the third tier to the second tier here. And so he has a degree of reputation here compared to what was bigged up in that video. It was quite amusing, but I'm sure he appreciates that little bit of irony also. And he was definitely on board with it to appear sort of James Bond-esque in his dinner jackets at the end of the video and saying, let's get it on, you know. That's fair enough, and that sort of does tick a lot of boxes out here. It's an unusual way to go about it, but I guess out here nothing's unusual anymore. Once you've seen a guy walking his cheetah on the beach on a regular basis, I think you get immune to unusual things, and you normalise the abnormal. Good luck to them. I've seen other projects here. There was a couple of projects out at Omar Quain, one of which involved David McCreevy for a period of time, because obviously he has an agency and his son has an agency. They were asked to bring players over to try and create a team. They created a team that had black and white shirts. They even got down to the design. And then COVID happened and everything disappeared. And I think that's very much characteristic of what happens below the top flight here in the UAE. The funds are shyer than you would think. And so I guess crowdfunding it in a way is an interesting way of doing it, and in a different way of doing it. And it might be something that the FIFA generation out here latch on to, something they understand, something they get into. There's even open invites to come and train to get involved with the squad. But you've got to pay to come and have your trial. And there'll be plenty of people doing that. Believe you me, I know the egos of young footballers out here. I haven't seen how Josh trained out here, particularly with some of the young local footballers who think that Ronaldo every five bloody minutes, and when they're not. When they think they're being clever doing Cruyff turns in their own area, and you're thinking, for fuck's sake, just put the bloody ball out, man. You know, it's a different kettle of fish. But I tackle them, or they don't want to know. And there's a reason why I'm not allowed in an over 40s league over here. But at the same time, you know, Iniesta's the name is who's at Russell Kema. Sorry, it's Iniesta, who's seen his career out there. And he's the poster boy for football in Russell Kema. But, you know, you need something like that. You need a gimmick. Below the top flight in the UAE, if you don't have the backing of one of the big families, if you don't have the Maktoums, or you don't have the Habtours, or somebody like that putting money into your club, you're not going to be successful in the UAE. You need to find another way to fund it. So good luck to them. I find it interesting with the way they're going to go. Let's see.
Yeah, thoughts on Stephen Taylor? I mean, he looked very smart, Stu. He looked the part.
Do you know what? If you don't mind, if Stephen Taylor's listening, or anybody connected to Stephen, we've invited you to come and see the Dubai Mags God knows how many times. Get off your arse and come down to Brooklyn Bar and see you, man.
I'll drop him a text message. I've still got his number, and he's still on the same number. I'll drop him a text message, Mish. I'll try and sort that out, mate. Leave it with us.
Go on, Stu. So living out here for as long as I have, that video was just normal. It wasn't, you know, it's yes, for people back home, it's like sensationalized, it's dramatized, it's like more of a movie thing, but they like to do, it has to be bigger, better, fastest first, and they're doing like that. And what was quite funny, because I know Mitch is not able to talk about the floods too much because he's in Dubai and they've all been told they can't. I can, so they've probably found the only driest bit in Dubai to do the video as well. So at that time, so...
I tell you what, mate. Remember we took the piss out of Rob for buying that big, daft, bloody truck? Well, he's laughing on the other side of his face now.
Oh, my God.
He showed us around the community here when I got here today. And I can see why he's been putting chains on and dragging cars out of deep, bloody water and all sorts and trying to help people. It's just been crackers.
I mean, changing the subject, that's one good thing that it showed how communities do get together and help each other out. But regarding the Stephen Taylor video, it was normal. They are very much a new generation, same as Saudi, where everything's played out on TikTok and what's it called, chat snapping and stuff, Snapchat and all that rubbish. that we don't adhere to because of our age, but they, it's the way of the world, and what it does is it attracts attention, and the fact that people thousands of miles away have seen it and talking about it, that just shows the power it can have. And Stephen Taylor has done, just to echo Mitch's earlier words, Stephen Taylor has done a great job when he was out here coaching, and his reputation has blossomed. So it is a bit of a coup for them to sign him. And yes, we as Newcastle fans know Stephen Taylor, who we all know that he's very good at acting. You know, remember that time he got shot against Aston Villa in the penalty box? So it's something that, is normal. It's something that is expected, but it's done for a reason. It's commercially done well. It's done by, it's very well marketed. And what it does is it shines a spotlight on the fact that who is the Stephen Taylor? So people start looking at him. People start, why there's such a big announcement with him? They'll then start looking at the club and think, do you know what? Why don't we go down there? And then it's about bums on seats, isn't it? And if you go there and you enjoy it, then they'll put on a decent show. A lot better than what Man City did at half-time for those who went to that game. What was going on there, I'll never be able to even explain it, but it was like something from the 70s or 80s, half-time entertainment there. But the idea is it's making it fun, making it enjoyable, and that's what we're missing in the English leagues. We're missing the fun and enjoyment. So I think it was a bit of harmless fun. It was a bit of way of advertising the fact that they believe they made a big coup by getting Stephen in as a manager, and I wish him all the luck.
Yeah, good luck to him. Certainly from everybody at NUFC Matters, and he left a few memories. I've got to be fairly honest, especially that one. Lots of people talking about him dancing in front of keepers and lying down behind walls. Yeah, he was the first person who started all that carry on, which was great. Spenny, good evening. He's in the chat. You'll see him on the fans forum tomorrow. Now, question the panel: the new offside coming in next season, and the goalkeeper only having 8 seconds. For the offside position, if an attacking player is ahead of the last opponent with their entire body, yeah, more rule changes imminent. I did bring this up on the breakfast show actually on Friday morning, because the 6 second rule actually still exists, Mitch.
It's still there in the
record books. And when I was speaking to a referee on Friday, he just said, "Well, they'll bring this in," and he says, "Everybody, including us, will just ignore it after a few weeks of it being implemented." It's as simple as that, really, isn't it?
It's absolutely that simple. You know, they seem to be able to change the interpretation of certain things to suit, like that handball by Arsenal in the Champions League, and the excuse they gave was, well, the referee decides when play started. Well, my understanding is in the actual written rules of the game, the referee decides when play started when he blows his fucking whistle. Mm-hmm. And he blew his whistle, and the goalkeeper passed it, and the lad handled it. That's a penalty. Done. And no discussion. No discussion. And yet, there was more than just bloody discussion. There was everybody bending over backwards to justify why the referee hadn't given it. That's ridiculous. I think introducing a VAR that's a bit more automated, well, it would certainly take out the accusation of, well, the person operating it is a Luton fan. That would take that out of, because how's VAR automated and an AI going to be a bloody Luton fan? It's not going to happen. But at the same time, why is it coming to this? What happened to common sense? What happened to dignity? What happened to integrity? What happened to the ability of just an official being very bloody good at his job? And I come back to what I said about Coney. I don't give a toss who somebody supports. If they're a bloody good and fair referee, they can referee any game they damn well want to. Because they understand that being a referee means taking your hat off, being impartial, understanding and applying the laws of the game as they are intended, having a degree of wiggle room to understand subtly within some of that. I hear people saying, oh, you should have former professionals on VAR. No, you should have a good official on VAR. But I wouldn't object to having a former professional in the room with him, because I'll tell you right now, when it comes to things like, is that a yellow or a red? A former professional will tell you whether some other professional has gone out to do someone, because they know. And I don't care how anybody wants to dress that up. A former professional will know when another professional has said, I'm having this lad, have me studs, have me elbow, have me back, whatever. Because they will apply that. If they're trained to do it properly and they have an ability to remove any affiliation to a club out of the conversation, they will know when another player has gone to do another player. That's simple as that. And you ask any former player, they will agree with that. They know when somebody's gone out of the way to do someone, and they know when something's a proper accident, if that's happened in the course of the game. You know, look at the situation today at Everton where they had that clash of heads. There was no malice or intent in that. That was a clash of heads. Poor bugger from Everton was out before he even hit the ground. And you've got people on social media crying for this and crying for that, and you're like, well, no, let's look at it with realistic opportunity. However, if Morgan Gibbs-White had a look sideways and gone in like this, somebody within the game might go, oh no, we know what he's just done there. Even if the on-field official hadn't seen it and wasn't oblivious to it, you know. And I think this is the thing about where we've gone with it all. And again, it comes back to football authorities like Premier League, like the AFL, and like PGMOL in particular. Now I know why Keith Hackett and Mark Halsey, who I know is not everybody's favourite person at Newcastle, I've had a lot of chats with Mark Halsey that I've always been positive, depending on whatever sort of media I've been on. It's funny, Andy Davies, who was done asking questions before, when we did Toon Talk Radio, we used to have Mark Halsey on a lot. And Mark was always frank and honest and open. And actually would admit when he got it wrong in hindsight, and was quite happy to say, yeah, I got that wrong. I wish I'd had another view of that. I wish I'd had somebody in me saying, come and have a look at the television. This might change your mind. That's how VAR should work with officials who have got an understanding about what's going on and understand that sometimes they can get it wrong depending on what their viewpoint is and how much of an opportunity they've had to see a situation. I think this is the issue we've got at the minute. It's a hot mess. It's an absolute hot mess. And nobody's stepped up and tried to do anything about it, really. They're just digging bigger holes.
Yes, Stu?
I think there's one theme that runs and alongside this, and it's just the lack of consistency in the decision-making. And if we looked at the last World Cup, the way that the offsides were done there, you can't contest it, can you? You know, it's they're twiddling with the rules, like the decision makers, especially UEFA, they'll meet in Switzerland or they'll meet somewhere else, they get together. I know we joked in the past about having the bourbons and custard creams and think, oh, we better think of something to justify us being here. Right, we'll tweak with that. And sometimes it's change for the sake of change for the sake of it, where if they're wanting clear and obvious errors pointed out, let's make the rules clear and obvious as well. You know, because I keep getting back to football should be a release, it should be an enjoyment for the fan. But most of them now need degrees in finance or degrees in understanding rules that are changing all the time to actually be able to make a comment on what they're watching. You know, you can shout offside and then you get like five people saying, that's not offside because of rule A, subsection 2, paragraph 1. You know, and it's not how it should be. You know, the whole idea is keep it simple, stupid, so everyone can understand it. Rather than trying to complicate it for the sake of complicating it. Now, if they're bringing this new offside rule, great, because that then eradicates that. But how many times have they asked the referee to go at the monitor, and how many times has the referee stood by his decision? And they're not all clear and obvious. You know, I know Mitch mentioned there about Mark Halsey. He's like, look, refs are human as well. They will make mistakes. But if they made one where the connotation's been put that it's been made because they support another team, I'd rather have someone supporting the team I was playing against, because if anything, they'll be fairer to us than to them, just to avoid being accused of biased behaviour. But you can still understand why Forest are saying it, and they've had a run just trying to survive and enjoy the Premier League, where everywhere they go, they've been blocked, stopped, pushed back down. And this is none of their doing. You know, we're opening a bigger can of worms about owner spending, and I'm trying to get away from the fact that our owners are very, very frustrated because they can't spend as much as they'd like to. But the teams I mentioned earlier, like the Derbies, the Aston Villas, the Forests that won the league in the 70s and early 80s, they had, technically, it was the managers that won it, wasn't it? They got the right manager at the right time. They got a group of players together that hugely overachieved, and that was the end result. Now, I seen Alan Thompson make a comment then, he's bang on. It shows how much Eddie Howe has overachieved last season and to a point to date this season, considering that he's hamstrung from the very, very start. Yes, he's spent more money than any other manager in Newcastle's history, but look where he started from. And I know I listened to one of Simon Jordan things last week. He was saying, and he said it at the start of the season as well, Arsenal had to spend 200 million to stand still. You know, you've got teams who are capable of spending that aren't allowed to, yet the teams who are capable of spending it, look at Chelsea, are they any further on? Tottenham, are they any further on? All these teams, Wolves have spent more than us. You know, there's so much that can be dissected from it, but ultimately it comes back to it's not fair, and the decisions have been made to favour a few. So if this offside rule gets brought in where it can't be contested because, as Mitch quite rightly said, the computer doesn't support anyone. It just does its job. But we've said that for so long about VAR. It's not VAR it's wrong. It's the people that are operating.
People operating, yeah.
Yeah, so this, and how many, for 2 or 3 years, the three of us, Steve Hastie included, the four of us, have been great advocates of getting referees in from the Netherlands or from Italy. But why should we have to do that when there's enough funding and there's enough education in this league? But you can see, if you're a young lad, think, well, I'm not going to make this football, should I turn to referee just to stay in the game? Because that's what it used to be like. No, I don't want to take all this crap that's going to get thrown at us. I don't want my family threatened because I've made a decision in a split second, which I believe to be correct, to then have half of London chasing me because I made a decision against Manchester United. You know, we've got to get to this stage where we can't have a reset. It's gone too far, but we have to have a bit more equality. Otherwise, as I said, the fun gets taken out of it, and that's when the support wanes. And when the support wanes, the money stops. And then what happens? It goes full cycle. The big people, the Americans and everyone else who's put the money in, they'll jump ship. And then what happens? The clubs get in trouble, and who then has to get them out of trouble? Us. So they either do it to make it fair, or they don't do it at all. So for me, I'm a great advocate of this offside rule being implemented next season. But at the same time, just be more consistent with your decisions. You can't see Fernandes falling. I use him as an example because he's guilty of it many times. Falling in the box untouched and getting a penalty, and then someone else making a decision, doing something similar and getting booked for it. You know, this is the consistency. So maybe he's retrospecting, or if they are going to bring a rule in, if someone dives and it is a blatant dive, send them off. Just send them off and it stops it. It'll stop it within 1 or 2 weeks of the Premier League if that happened. But they won't do it because it's the big teams that do most of the attacking. It's the big teams that get most of the decisions in their favour.
So, Stephen Anderson says, I'd like to see the referees interviewed after the game. I'd love that. Again, the North East Footy Breakfast Show last week is what I said. I said I'd love to see that happen. You'd have to be held accountable.
Just mic'd up.
Mic'd up would be good, but coming on afterwards, after they've had as much time as the ref, they've had as much time as the manager. They've had as much time as the manager to have a think about what's been said. Let them come on and let them explain it. It would take a lot of this crap away from the whole game, Mitch. You know, 100%.
No, I get where you're coming from. But for me, let's hear the thought processes as fans. There might be discussions had between VAR and the referee, which as fans, because everybody has got a fair understanding how the game works, that you might hear a thought process between that VAR official and the referee, and everybody goes, don't agree, but yeah, all right. You know, and you might get that with a post-match interview, but I think you'd get more of it out of it on the spot. Everybody's made up and has to be accountable for what they're saying right there and then.
Yeah.
And even if they then get it wrong, according to the general opinion, look, there are still things within football which are opinion-based, and that's fine. You may not agree with it, but that's what it is. And if you hear the thought process, it might change the mind of enough people to calm the furore a little bit. I think Barry's right. I think live mic is the way to go, because you're instantly accountable for what you say. Because what we've heard coming from VAR and coming from people associated with VAR, like Meg Dean when he was grandstanding on Sky Sports and basically said the VAR was covering for his mate's arse. Well, we would have heard that absolutely live and on the spot. Or we wouldn't have heard it because they knew they couldn't cover for their mate's arse because they were made up live and on the spot. And so I think that's the only way we'll get it right. We hear it with rugby. We hear it with cricket. When that fourth umpire is saying, right, I want this view, I want that view, show me side on, show me snicko, show me this. And you can see the process he's gone through to get the decision that he has. And statistics say 98.2% of the time, cricket and the DRS get it right. You'll still always get controversial decisions. Like, was the ball in his hands when he made the catch, or did it hit the ground first? And sometimes they'll get that right, and sometimes they'll get it wrong. But if it's close enough to be that difficult, you probably should go with the on-field decision anyway. But that also is taking cricket time to get to that point. Probably the thick end of 5 or 6 years. Like I've said about NFL before, I think the NFL took 10 years to get their decision review system right. Have rugby union and rugby league got it 100% right? Not really, not yet, but better than what we've got in football.
I've got to apologise, not getting all these questions today, because the answers that we're having to give have to be quite long to some of the stuff we've talked about. Gated Council have now put a statement out. Andrew Davis, thanks for pointing that out. Following the announcement for the National League, we'd like to clarify, we have not simply refused Gated FC's application for security of tenure at Gated International Stadium. Although we're currently working to appoint a partner operator for the stadium, we've also been working with the club to find a solution and provide the league with the necessary assurances. This includes a 10-year agreement that would allow any new operator to negotiate the terms of the football club, and just the usual drivel about continuing to advocate the success of Gated FC. So something, again, which we've already mentioned at the top of the programme, but it's an ongoing thing, that.
How does that fit with the Gated Council's leader's tweet that he then deleted?
Yeah.
I think we need to do a little bit of digging there.
Yeah.
Backtrack, moonwalk, call it what you want. But answering the previous question, Steve, regarding, I forgot what the previous question was. Now, the decisions by the referees and stuff, the referees will never, ever get interviewed after the game, because they're meant to be impartial. They could be put on the spot, and then they're open to not just legal cases against the PGMOL, but also personal libel cases if they admit they've done something wrong. So you're protected to a point. And also, we need to encourage more refereeing, not try and hang them out to dry. And this is where I think it was Phil Hook that mentioned there about the rugby union. Whether you agree with the decision made at the end, and I was really against what happened when Scotland played France in the Six Nations. they scored a try in the last phase of the game, and then it looked like it was going to get given, and then the fourth official was like, ah, well, maybe it didn't, maybe it didn't. So then, because they couldn't decide, it went against it. So I was furious with the reversal of the decision, but I understood that we were walked through it. So you could see that it's, if there's an error, it's human error, you accept it. There's no like cheating or nastiness or underhand actions involved. And that's something that if they're not introducing it, when they've seen it successful in rugby, they've seen it successful in cricket, two sports that are well-sported, well-funded, but nowhere near on the same scale as what the Premier League is, why aren't they wanting to introduce it? What are they hiding? What do you think it would stop? And I think most of us know the answer to that, and it's called favouritism.
Okay, yes, I did see this, David. He says, did you see the stat today that Chris Woods was top of the goal conversion charts this season? Yeah, since the EPL was formed. Yeah, we've always said you should have kept a hold of Chris Woods. Just don't bring that up when Supermac's on, please. And Derek,
holding your wood, Steve.
Yeah, Derek, the answer is yes. It is becoming a tarnished product. Mr. Ice is in the chat again. He said he has a question for a Liverpool from a Liverpool fan. If you had to swap Bruno and Isak for two of our players, who would you take? It's a hypothetical question, not to be taken seriously. I'd take nobody. I'd keep the two of them. There's nobody in your squad I'd want, to be perfectly honest.
Is it for a Liverpool fan or from a Liverpool fan?
No, he's a Liverpool fan, mate.
Right. He has a question from a Liverpool fan, right?
Yeah, but he didn't put that, so I've corrected it.
Right. If you had to swap Bruno G and he's like, well, we don't have to swap them, and we would.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, which two Liverpool players would we take? Well, we'd keep what we've got. We'll probably take your keeper, and that would be about it.
And Mitch, you said no, just no.
Nah, exactly. Not interested.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, Derek, again, just ignore that. What do you think of certain Twitter accounts stating that we need to find 20 million by June? Just ignore them, mate. They're not even worth time of day.
Man, give us it for Ashworth.
Yes.
Right, done.
Exactly. Slightly off football, but Newcastle United related. What is your favourite song that reminds you of your home, Newcastle? This is quite a good question for you lads living abroad. Mitch, which song reminds you of Newcastle?
Tunnel of Love by Dire Straits.
Stu?
We're coming home, Newcastle. I love that one.
Busker.
I mean, technically, yeah. Tunnel of Love's about Whitley Bay, but yeah.
All right. Barry Hogan. Barry Hogan, he'll be on the fans forum tomorrow night. Stu, Mitch, rumours, Newcastle looking to interview a shortlist now of three director of football roles. Any idea who they are? Is Maldini one of them? We touched on this on Friday, that Maldini's been for his second interview. So I presume there is others in contention. Any idea who?
Yeah, yes. No, I need to think. I was talking to someone today about it, actually, this morning.
Yeah, I was talking to someone yesterday about it. Probably the same person, so I'll let you take the stage, mate.
Yeah, the person that I said initially, same initials as Paolo Maldini, is Paul Mitchell. I am of the understanding, now this isn't fact, so, you know, that he was interviewed down south, not in Newcastle. But Maldini definitely twice in Newcastle. And for me, I think if the people running the club in the UK had a decision, they would favour someone more UK-based or Premier League savvy. Whereas I think Maldini is more of a PIF signing. He has the glitz, he has the glamour. He's globally recognised. He would attract players, and it shows, look, we mean business, we could attract the best. And I don't think many can say that Maldini's name is not often quoted with the best. And I think with the Ashworth situation, they won't budge. So all this now, it's like, oh, Man United are waiting for Newcastle to get their new director of football, so they'll lower the fee, we'll give them 5 million, etc. They're not dealing with little old Newcastle anymore. They're dealing with a well-oiled machine, a well-funded machine, who out of principle will make him sit and do his garden leave until they get either what they want or very close to what they want. They're not going to get pushed over. Or rolled over, as we have done in the past. So there was another one, that was touted. I think it's a Sporting Lisbon sporting director. I forget his name. And there was another one in the UK. There was four in total. But at the moment, Maldini's heading the field. But I still would prefer Paul Mitchell.
Okay. As you've gone with that one, Mitch, I'll give you this one. Barry is asking about the strips. He says, what do you guys think of the leaked supposed image of the new Adidas home shirt? Looks like our old NTL shirt. Not greatly impressed, if that's it. Yeah, I mean, there was one or two people putting out images last week, Mitch. You know.
Okay, let's open me gob. You know, both of you know.
Yeah.
I've seen the renders. I seen them weeks ago.
You did, yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'll openly say here what I've said to other people, including you, that people would be a little bit underwhelmed by the home shirt. The clue in how that was going to go is in the Amazon documentary. They talk about three big black stripes. Well, look at the Ren then. I think there's a picture of Harvey Barnes doing the rounds in one. With three big black stripes on the front with grey accents. That absolutely matches everything I was told about the shirt. It's close to the Argentina template, but isn't exact. The collar's different. It'll grow on people. It's black white stripes is what we want. I don't know what they're doing with the back, whether it's stripes or and then a patch with the numbers. I don't know what colours they're going to go with the numbers either. But that absolutely matches pretty damn close to the end as I saw a few weeks ago, well, months ago. The away shirt is going to be a variation on the blue and red hoops. There's going to be a twist on it. That some of these people who are putting their versions of it out have got right and some have got it wrong. It's something that's going to be a DNA thread through a lot of Adidas shirts next season, and that's monochrome. So the badge, the sponsorship, it'll be white. Won't have much in the way of other colours on it. It'll all be white. Yeah, that's pretty much the shirt I've seen the renders of. Whether that's an AI or put together electronic version, whatever.
Well, that's doing the rounds on WhatsApp.
That's pretty close to the renders I've seen. The collar I saw was different, but you know what? That might have been tweaked because what I saw was a couple of months ago at least. I think what they were trying to get was permission off Noon to do the sleeve patch in monochrome as well as the badge and seller and everything else. But that's something you'll see on other Adidas shirts next season. Arsenal's home shirt, their badge will just be a big white cannon in the same vein as what our away shirt will be, monochrome badge. And that's part of their DNA in their shirts for next season. The third shirt is the one that I think everybody will get excited about. And it is very similar to the white with black and green accents that we've had in the past. That used to have a Brownie logo on it. But the difference with that will be the badge. My understanding is it will be the 80s NUFC badge.
The one that you like, Steve.
Yeah.
Now, here's the next thing. I was told that might be made part of a range with a return of the trefoil on as opposed to the three stripes. But I don't know if that's going forward into the shirt range. What they are showcasing with these three shirts is what their mindset is going forward. That they want to be, I think they've played it safe with the home kit, they've played it relatively safe with the away kit, and the third kit is the one they've sort of tried to mix it up a little bit on. On the collar of one of the away or the third will also be the 70s Newcastle United round crest as well, somewhere in there. And I think we'll have messages like "How are the lads" and the Geordies or whatever on some of the collars. Okay.
Yeah.
And again, what they're showcasing is we've got property of all the badges, all the designs. We can do anything you want. This is us being conservative with your first release. I've been promised I'll get a look at the next lot of releases by the time next season kicks off, because they're already working on the next set of shirts going forward, and they will be more expansive. If you look at what they've done with Man United this season, on their third shirt, they've got the devil, not the Man United crest. That's the whole point of having all of the intellectual property for badges and things like that, that we can do different things with different shirts at different times, and we're going to mix it up a little bit, and we're going to try and be a little bit different. But I genuinely believe what they've done for our first set of shirt releases has played it pretty safe. And so some people will be pissed off about that, and I get that. But stick with it. The other thing we're going to get is access to the tier one Trefoil stuff. So if you look at what's kicking around, if you go poke around Adidas website, you'll see Sambas with Man United, with Arsenal, with Juve, with Mexico, with, you know, a number of other clubs. That'll be us. And we'll have a Trefoil set. We'll have a retro set. They've got access to all the designs, and they've got access to all the intellectual property. And I think that's the most important thing, is that as we go forward, what the release under a Trefoil release or a special release or a tier one release along the lines of Man United and what everybody else, go and have a poke around the Adidas sites worldwide and see what's available for some of these clubs at the minute. We're going to be that. And yes, my bank balance is going to fucking empty. I'm going to end up with three straight bloody everything. And I don't care. And there's plenty of who are going to be in the same boat. But give them a break, I think, on these releases. If you're a bit underwhelmed by the home shirt, I get it. I was. If I think the away shirt shows where we sit in the DNA of Adidas, that we are at tier one, and a lot of the tier one clubs, either on their home or their away shirts, are going to get this monochrome, modified badge, modified sponsor effect. And then the third shirt is where they're starting to play and tease a little bit, because going forward, expect releases with a Trefoil and a 1970s crest on. I'm in the front of the queue for that. You know, that is me all over. So, you know, stick with it. Don't be too disappointed by some of it. I spoke to Chris from Gallagher Shots through the week, because they did a thing where they had put their renders together. And I'm like, where did you get them from? And basically, it was somebody's told them. And all of these renders that I've seen were so close to what I've seen. It was like, you've not seen them, but somebody's described it to you. And so, you know, fair play to them for being able to get some good content out and get people talking, because that's what this is all about, isn't it? You know, what we do here, whenever anybody's competitor, we should be all in it together, and we're all delivering bloody good Newcastle United content. People talk about bloody sides, and that pisses me off massively. The only side we're interested in is Newcastle United. But I was fascinated to see where they'd got that info from, and he was open enough to have a chat with us, that's cool. And you're right, Barry, the badges aren't going to come upside down or backside forward or falling off, or you're not going to get a hoodie which has got a Newcastle badge and a Rangers zip on it, because that's the joys of the story. We're going so far ahead with it, it's worth sticking with it. Try not to be too underwhelmed by some of the things. That playing it safe.
Stu, you've only got 2 minutes, mate, to give us your opinion, because I've got to go. So, Stu?
I think the key word from what Mitchell said there is underwhelmed, because I was when I seen it. But then we take a step back, and controversially, I think Castore actually delivered some quality shirts. Pardon the pun, the fact that they delivered quality, because they didn't. But the designs were of good quality. And some of them very initiative as well. Where the thing is, we wanted a big sponsor. We've got one with Adidas. And if you don't like the home shirt, don't buy it. Get the away shirt or get the third shirt or don't get any of them. Wait for what I'll do. Get the polo shirt with a Newcastle crest on and the trefoil, Adidas trefoil, like what Mitch is wearing at the moment. Get that, you know, but whatever you get, they'll have your size and they'll be able to deliver it to you. They'll be able to sell it to you in the shop and wherever you go, not just in Newcastle. We know that we're one of the top six Adidas brands, premium brands that they're pushing, the clubs, that is. And this is just the start. So I can understand them playing it safe rather than go for an almighty risk. They don't want any furore coming from what you've done. So, yes, the three stripes, black, white, black, or white, black, black, wear, white, whatever it is that's a nod to Adidas. The second strip is the one that people say it's the most popular. It was the most popular Adidas away strip, I suppose. I wasn't a great fan of it, to be fair. And the third strip I won't buy because it's got green in it. So that's why I'll wait for the polo shirt. But ultimately, whatever you want, you're going to be able to get. And all the money will go back into the club, into the sponsors. And isn't it a great thing? So why should we complain?
Cracking show tonight. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Moderators, great job as usual. And thanks to everybody for participating in the chat. If you haven't subscribed already, please subscribe. 10 new subscribers tonight. Definitely been worthwhile doing this. We're averaging 10 a night. So thank you, everybody, for joining. And it is free content. Back tomorrow, Fans Forum, 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Mitch, Stu, thanks for your time. Have a good evening. Take care, lads.
Cheers, everyone.
Yeah, Steve.